Hello again. It's Vox Pop, don't you know? It's 2 o'clock, and this is our, what we call it, a call-in show. People call in. They call in with questions. We talk about things. Well, today on this show, on Wednesday the 25th of January, it's a bird show. And when that happens, we bring Rich Guthrie in. And Rich, he's a genius. He's easily the second smartest person in the room right now. And we'll talk about birds. He'll answer your questions about birds. Maybe you want to make a bird call. Try to stump Rich. He knows every bird call. And if you ask him nicely, he'll make a bird call for you. And I always find that endlessly entertaining. I'm sure you don't. The number is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. Break out your Sibleys. Break out the Crosleys. It's the Bird Show. It begins after the news. Well, hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm your host, Ray Graff. We'll be discussing birds on the program today, and Rich Guthrie is here to help answer your questions about them. Rich is retired from the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation. He's a board member of the State Ornithological Association and the regional reviewer for the premier birding site, eBird. My producer bet me a beer that I couldn't say ornithological, so I'll try to work it in as much as I can. If you have an ornithological question, the number to call is 800-348-2551 for our ornithologically astute guest, Rich Guthrie. It's 800-348-2551. A couple more, I'll be up to a six-pack.
You'll be up to a six-pack. Yeah, well, then we got to be careful.
All right, that's quite a show. And you can also email the program at voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org. Richard P. Guthrie, welcome back to the show.
Hey, good to be here.
What does the P stand for? Pierre?
Close.
Penelope?
The English Pierre.
Peter?
Peter.
Oh, very nice. Well, yes. Nice to have you on the show.
As in the song of the Tufted Titmouse.
And how does that go? It doesn't sound like Peter.
Mnemonically, it sounds like it says it's a two-tone word with the second note dropping down.
Do
Peter,
it again.
Peter.
Can you get one that sounds like Guthrie?
And certainly we do.
Really?
That would be the song sparrow. Breaks into operatic.
Fine. All right. Well, we had some not bizarre for this time of year, but interesting winter weather.
Tough weather.
Sleet and piles of ice. And what does that do to the little birdie friends?
It actually, what it does is more to our benefit. The birds can hack it. They've been through this for many winters in their genetic development. But what it does for us is it brings them right to us, and those bird feeders. Remember, we're hearing people talking about their empty bird feeders back in December and November, and they're here.
For some sleet.
All it takes is a little tough weather, and they say, okay, we'll buy. Okay. So they come in, and hordes of birds are now coming into the bird feeders, and thank you very much. It's a great help for them. It supplements their little diet while... The worst thing for birds is this freezing rain combination because it just locks up everything under that coating of ice. All those berries are left out there or seeds on the plants. So the sunflower seed and the thistle seed and the suet and the peanut butter, all those things are good.
So when the weather is poor and if we have a stretch of bad weather, say sleet 3 days in a row, how long, given the metabolism of your average bird, can a bird last without feeding on anything?
Well, not all that long, but many birds can actually go into a torpor state during these harsh periods.
Done that myself.
A couple of more ornithologicals, it might be sooner then.
All right, yes.
So, they can actually quiet down and just stay huddled in a safe spot out of the wind, out of the weather, and wait it out.
Well, Rich, the lines are loaded here, so let's get right to the calls. I know you have some events you want to talk about. We'll do that a little later in the show. 800-348-2551 is the number. We start out with Mark in Peru. Mark, you're on.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
My question is, would a boreal chickadee that's outside of its range ever find a mate with a black-capped chickadee, which it seems to travel with? Or being a flock with?
Yeah, I hear your question, and the answer, I don't know. And I'll tell you why. They so seldom overlap like that in their ranges. The black-capped chickadee really doesn't happen where boreal chickadees occur, and vice versa. However, right there in Peru, there's that wonderful boreal chickadee that is regular at a bird feeder there, and I love it. It's
I actually live there. That's why I was calling.
Hey, you're the man. Thank you very much for that.
I see the little guy every day.
Good for you.
Is there a reason, Mark, that you would ask this question?
Well, my girlfriend was really the one who was curious about it, and I was a little curious myself because I see that it seems to have seamlessly joined this little group of black-capped chickadees that come to the feeder every day.
Right, you are, yeah.
And it seems to get along with everyone, and I see a few of the other chickadees might fight or, not fight, but, you know, push each other away a little, but I never see the boreal chickadee doing anything like that. It gets along with everyone in its little group.
Yeah, and chickadees are a gregarious bunch of birds.
Yeah.
They associate them and titmice where their ranges are concurrent and so they
possible.
The answer to your question is interesting, and the reason why I say that, Ray mentioned I'm an eBird reviewer, and just today I looked at a report coming into eBird, which is, as it says, a premier birding site that is sponsored by Cornell University and the National Audubon Society, a report of somebody reporting a hybrid, black-capped chickadee and boreal chickadee.
I'll be darned.
That's the first I've ever seen mention of that.
So they get along.
Actually, that's one of the things that we were talking about. What would the offspring be if that ever happened?
If that were to happen. And I don't know. I've never seen any reference to something like that before. And although, that, you know, now that the subject has come up, I'm going to be very attuned to it. I asked the reporter of that hybrid chickadee to get back to me with some more details and hope maybe a picture, but certainly more details. So we'll see what comes of it. It's a very interesting prospect.
Mark, thank you so much for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551 if you desire to speak with Richard P. Guthrie. Stephen in upstate New York. Stephen, you're on.
Gentlemen, thank you for taking my call.
Sure. We're here.
So about 2 years ago, I bought a house, and since then I've been having a curious problem with crows. The house has some ground-level basement windows. The foundation has exterior insulation, and I find that the crows strut in front of those windows and peck and literally destroy the insulation. Now, I've looked for bugs. There don't appear to be any. And they peck off and destroy much more of it than they could possibly carry away. So I doubt if they're using it for any nesting purposes. Can you tell me why they're doing this? Why they're pecking at these areas of insulation and doing their little prance walk in front of the windows?
Well, I I've heard of that situation. Incidents in the past where birds and buildings don't get along necessarily, and woodpeckers especially. And that's the first I've heard of that. I'm just curious to know what they're thinking of when they're going after that insulation. Does it look like food to them? Are they trying it out? They should, you know, learn quickly that it is not and get over it. But
crows are fairly smart.
Yeah, they're also playful. I mean, you know, they will gather stuff and run around and play with it for. Yeah, but I don't imagine that's the issue here. So I really don't know what that is about.
Maybe you could video that and send us a video before the next show, Stephen.
I might do that. In the meantime, I've read up a lot on them. They are quite smart. In fact, I've decided with the next election, I'm going to write in a crow. I think they're smarter than the candidates we've had recently.
Heckle or Jekyll, whichever one you want. Well, thanks a lot for that call, my friend. We appreciate it. Over to Roy in Pittsfield. Roy.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, can you hear me?
Sure thing.
Hi. I actually, two small things. I had noticed today on my way to work, I stopped at a local causeway, and I actually was lucky enough to catch some pictures of a bald eagle this morning.
Mm-hmm.
Just a minor thing. But in my other times that I've been there, I actually was able to take a picture of a bird that I've kind of narrowed down to what I think might be a hooded merganser. Does that sound familiar to you?
Yeah, well, I presume there's water near this place. Where did you say you stopped?
Yeah, It's at Anona Lake in Pittsfield.
Okay.
There, and there's a lot of waterfowl around. And,
sure.
I was watching the mallards one day, and I happened to notice that this really, really bright white and black silhouetted water bird was there amongst the mallards, and I was a little blown away by it. Decided to take a picture of it. Is it common to see mergansers in this area?
Yes and no. The hooded merganser is one of the prettiest ducks out there. They're more or less
more a
summer bird than a winter bird. They're a fish-eating bird.
Beautiful.
They dive into water, and they have specially adapted beak with little serrations on the end so they can grasp a fish and hold on to it. That's what they eat, as well as other things, you know, frogs and salamanders. But the hooded merganser, the male, is just a really dramatic-looking bird. And I will say this, that over the recent years, hooded mergansers have been coming more numerous, never that numerous, but more present in the winter than in the past years. Huh. Back way, you know, and it's one of those ongoing changes that we're noticing out there. But hooded mergansers in Pittsfield this time of year, unusual, rare, but certainly not unprecedented.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, I was lucky enough to get a great picture of it, so.
Oh,
I was actually wondering while I had you on the line if I was able to forward that picture out to you so I could share it.
That'd
with
be
you.
Great.
What is that email address, Richard P.
The
Guthrie?
The email address is the name Richard P. Guthrie, P as in Peter, Guthrie, @gmail.com. Richard
Excellent.
P. Guthrie.
I'll forward that on to you. That's amazing. Thank you.
Hey, thanks
Great.
A lot.
And I, you know, here's another thing. Folks who do want to have, I do the blog at the Albany Times Union.
Yeah.
And I would love to be able to include people's photographs in that blog with a little discussion.
If you want to allow that, put that
I would
the
need
text
the permission.
The
yes,
yeah.
I would request. It would not go without permission, but I would love to do that. And this way we get to share in it, you know, a little more and a little more explanation, elaboration.
Generate some traffic for the old blog, right?
Good old blog.
Cha-ching.
Yeah.
The number to call here is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. It is The Bird Show on Vox Pop. We'll be right back.
Support for WMC comes from Preservation League of New York State, offering EPIP, a revolving loan program to acquire, stabilize, and restore historic buildings in New York so our past has a future. Bed and Bowl, Huntington, Massachusetts, a home-style bed and breakfast for dogs, offering overnight boarding on a 50-acre farm, convenient to Northampton, Springfield, and the Berkshires, bedandbowl.com. Union College Concert Series, presenting pianist Alexander Melkinov, a protege of Richter. He performs Rachmaninoff Variations and Book 2 of Debussy's Preludes, Sunday, January 29th, 3 p.m., unioncollegeconcerts.org. And Kern Compliance Services, Incorporated, Greenwich, New York, and Mendota Heights, Minnesota. In New York and across the country, life insurance carriers and their distribution partners come to us for DOL Fiduciary Rule Compliance Training and Guidance. KernCompliance.com.
Say the old lockbox is open. WAMC.org is the website, and our fund drive begins a week from this coming Monday. So that's Monday, February 6th at 6 a.m. Alan Chartok will be in Pledge Central taking your pledges, and our team of volunteers will be here taking your calls. But if you want to make it a shorter fund drive, the thing to do is kick into the lockbox now. And we're hoping to get to the halfway point of the drive before we even start. It's a $1 million fund drive. We want to make $500,000 in the lockbox and make it a very short and manageable fund drive. We're over $406,000 right now. So if you want to make your pledge, WAMC.org, $150 pledge, you can get some very rare things. We have a WAMC First Amendment T-shirt, kind of a nice, cream color with the wording of the First Amendment. And also a First Amendment mug, WAMC coffee mug. That's for a $150 pledge. $100 pledge, you get either or. $150, you get both. But whatever you can do, whether it's $5 or $1,000, the main thing is keeping this radio station going, and you know how to do that. WAMC.org. All right, it's our Vox Pop show. Rich Guthrie here. He is our ornithological expert. That's another one I get. And the email address is voxpop@wamc.org. A couple of quick emails here, Rich, and then back to the phones.
Sure.
This one's from Sue in Chatham. It's a couple of paragraphs, so I'm going to clear my throat. In the Everglades last week, we were alone on a bridge on a narrow dirt road at a pool. Over 45 minutes, we witnessed this scene from quite close up, 50 feet. A large alligator was being harassed by a snowy egret, a tricolor heron, and a few ibis. They would deliberately walk toward the alligator and face it down. The alligator would move a little, and the birds continue to get close and face it off. We expected to see the gator take a chomp at one of them, but in the end, they chased the gator out of the pool. It walked out onto the muddy shore and into the surrounding foliage. Then the birds turned back to the pool and quietly went about their business.
Hey, risky birds, I'll tell you.
It's kind of a children's story.
It's
from Sue and Chatham. What do you think?
Silly birds. Gators, you know, if that gator wanted them, they can move very, very quickly.
Yeah.
But birds have this way of harassing little guys they don't like or big guys they don't like.
Yeah.
And I guess they
felt... We got some people around here who could do that.
I guess they felt safety in numbers there. The ibis, by the way.
Oh, ibis.
Ibis.
Let's call the whole thing off.
And the herons and the egrets. You know, they're just a snack for some of those gators down there.
So the gator, is he a playful critter? Does he enjoy the scamps?
No. He was just probably very, very annoyed and... he was thinking, how can I get rid of these pests?
I suspect Sue might have had a couple and made the whole thing up.
Well, I have every faith in that little story there.
Sue Chatham, all right, Rich is with you. This is from Nancy. I've heard that some wild birds can be infected with bird flu. Have you seen any scientific reports warning that birds should not be fed at feeders where they will be close to many other birds with whom they would not normally be in close contact in the wild?
No.
No,
that has not surfaced around here. We've heard birds have a way of dispersing, and if there is a contagion out there, that they do infect one another. That's a super tragedy. We see that on occasion with waterfowl, where there are large concentrations in a small area, such as some of these blackwater type refuges, but. I would not be concerned about it around here.
Okay. Back to the phones. And Pat in Albany. Pat, you're on.
Hi there. I have a question I think somebody just touched on a little bit. We have woodpeckers attacking our house, putting substantial holes in the eaves. And we're really at a loss as to what to do to get rid of them.
We have cedar shingles,
if that's relevant.
Cedar shingles. Yeah, we get these calls at least once a show. And, Rich, your answer is usually the same.
Yeah, no, it's going to be different this time.
Really?
I'm spinning my emails backwards because, I know.
Oh, gosh, I got all day. Go ahead, spin your email backwards.
There is a product out there, and it is a deterrent. It is a visual deterrent to stop. My email thing here is going crazy.
Really?
Really? I know. There is a deterrent out there. Oh, here it is. You ready for this?
Yes.
It is called, what does that say?
Oh, good heavens.
It's a scare tape.
It's a scare tape. Well, we'll play this show. That's pretty scary. So, Pat, do you know why they're doing that? Are there bugs in the house?
Well, we suspect there might be bugs between the shingles and the house or somewhere in the walls. Yes,
well, here's the thing. And it's called Lujax, L-U-J-A-X. I don't know what the origin of that word is, but L-U-J-A-X as an X-ray, holographic scare tape.
What?
Yeah.
Scare, S-C-A-R-E?
Correct.
So you scare the birds, you put the tape on the house, and you scare the birds.
You put these strips of tape on the house, and I have it on good faith that it works.
Wow, go figure.
And this is from, this is thanks to Cynthia Kirk, who sent this information into
Lujax.
Me.
Lujax. Lujax. Wow. L-U-J-A-X.
Yeah, I'm just curious, What is it about this?
Well, you hope it's if it's bugs, you've got a problem. That may be what they're after. Oftentimes, that's what it is. That's something I think is a more serious problem than a woodpecker.
So woodpecker's helping you to some extent.
They're the tree surgeon for you.
Sure.
Lujax tape. Now, will that work on kids too?
You could try it.
Scare them? What's so scary about tape?
It has a metallic sound to it. It rattles. And it also has a reflective surface on it. And as the wind causes it to shimmer, I guess it's enough to deter the birds.
Well, I'll be dipped.
And
what
it's not unattractive. And
Unattractive to put tape all over your beautiful cedar shingles.
People put Christmas decorations on their cedar shingles. It's going to be like a year-round holiday.
Pat, we're drinking the Kool-Aid here. I got to be honest.
It won't scare the bugs, just the birds, right?
Maybe. I don't know if it's gone. You know, if they've researched it. No, I don't think. I think you're right.
Pat, thank you. Hey, good luck with that.
Thank you very much.
And I want to thank Cynthia for bringing that to our attention.
Thank you, Cynthia.
Anita, we get that call all the time.
Anita in somewhere. Anita, where are you calling from?
Clinton.
Ah, we missed the N, and I didn't want to say it over the radio. You're on.
I was wondering if I could possibly have a male harrier at this time of year. It's gone across the field 3 times, very dark back, almost black, and a white belly.
And what is it doing? The harrier is a type of hawk.
Right.
What we used to call the marsh hawk. And what the harrier does is it flies out over the open fields, in a circular pattern. And hence the scientific name is called Circus cyanus, where cyanus meaning blue, and gray blue. And they circle around looking for mice in the meadow.
Yeah.
But they don't really have a dark back. The female and the young are brown, with a little streaking on them. And the male is gray coloration with black wingtips. And they have long wings and a long tail and this rocking type flight where they go back and forth in a harrier fashion.
Huh. I'll be darned.
Yeah.
So what do you think it is?
What hawk would be very black on top?
Oh, that sounds to me like it might be a red-tailed hawk. And they're dark, very dark, looking black in certain light and very light underneath, depending on the age of the bird. And they may or may not display the red tail, but the red-tailed hawk...
They're plentiful in this region.
Are plentiful in this region, and... they will. I'll show here.
Oh, yeah.
We have a picture of the red-tailed hawk. And the northern ones, the ones that come down from Canada, are especially dark on the back. They're much darker than the ones that we have around here. So it could be one
I
of the northern visitors into Clinton, New York.
All right. Well, Anita, thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call and have yourself a nice week. Over to Ken in Catskill. Ken.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey.
A couple of weeks ago, I bought a bird feeder and put it up in my girlfriend's backyard in Slingerlands.
Yeah.
And it took a day, and then a pair of cardinals showed up, and then just a few minutes later, a number of other birds came by, titmouse and junco and chickadees. And then the next day, only the cardinals showed up, and then after that, nobody.
Ooh.
Hmm.
What do you think?
What did I do wrong?
Nothing. It's their loss. No, I'm just...
they'll be back? Maybe?
Well, let's look
at... They haven't been back in all this time. The feeder, I haven't had to do a thing to the feeder.
Well, they were... Then maybe, I don't know if it's maybe the food mixture that you have in there. And one thing I strongly recommend against is the store-bought, the supermarket food mixtures.
This was from a... one of those hardware chains. It was their own brand.
Yeah, same deal. I discourage that because I don't know why they do this. How much can birdseed cost? That they got to throw in these fillers that the birds don't find.
Like what?
The red millet and some
it's
of
delicious.
The
delicious.
Yeah, sure it would be, but they have. If you're going to put a table out there, you want to set it right for the birds.
And so try some different feed then.
It's different feed, or perhaps a location of the feeder too close, too wide open. There are lots of different possibilities, but I would start with the type of food. I recommend black oil sunflower seed, cracked corn, thistle seed, and suet.
Well, I know in previous years when I've put up a feeder, anything with sunflower seeds seems to attract blue jays.
Mm-hmm.
And all they care about are the sunflower seeds, and they chase all the other birds away.
Well, I put out cracked corn for the blue jays, and I'll have it side by side on a platform feeder, and I watch them. They go for the cracked corn.
Really?
Yeah, you know, the little gold that glitters, they're in there, and works for me. Cracked corn's a lot cheaper.
They're not the nicest birds, though, are they?
They're a little aggressive, aren't they? Yeah, they're bold.
They seem to bully the other birds when I've had them
before. I agree.
Well, they announce their presence loudly.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Hey, man, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is here. He's a board member of the State Ornithological Association.
Oh, there you go again.
And over to Dennis in Albany. Dennis.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
I wondered, Rich, if you were aware of the recent find that they found a Corsa fossa with a complete syrinx. And this is 68 to 66 million years ago, before the demise of the dinosaurs. They're hypothesizing that it's sort of a duck-like call, but they're trying to attach artificial soft tissue to it now to see if they can get a sound of birds during the age of dinosaurs.
Wow, that's incredible.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah,
it is. Well,
to actually get something from that far away, the halcyon days of the age of dinosaurs, birds were flying around too.
Well, how will we know if they got it right? But we can you know, make, I think that's great. You know, just,
well, they might anatomically find something that's similar to nowadays syrinxes in existing birds, and then mimic some of that.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure if you were aware of that or not.
No, I wasn't.
Dennis, I can tell you this. If, in fact, they make a sound, Rich Guthrie will be able to imitate it.
Well, I'm not so sure. It'll be an old.
That's what I was going to ask.
Let me try quack, quack.
There you go.
Yeah. Well, Dennis, all right. I just thought you'd be interested.
No, that's great. I'll do me a favor. Just email the information on that, because to me.
You could put it on your blog as well, right?
We could do that, and we can talk about it next time around here.
What is that email address?
RichardPGuthrie@gmail.com.
And how would one spell Guthrie?
G as in George, U-T-H-R-I-E. Common spelling.
10-4. Over to Tom in Pittsfield. Tom, you're on.
Hey, my guys. I just wondered if bluebirds stay here. I thought I saw one during the winter. And then if they do, is there something you could put out to attract them, to feed them?
The answer is yes and no. In fact, funny you should mention, I was on one of the back roads today, more or less on my way in, kind of a little diversion detour.
And, got lost?
No, just checking out the neighborhood.
All right.
And sure enough, there was a bird on top of a tree. Stopped the car, made a U-turn, went back and took another look, and there it was, a bluebird on the top of a very tall tree, a little bit out of its element, being way up there as high as it was. But there it was. Beautiful sight, red, white, and blue. Delightful little guy. The answer is yes. They do stick around through the winter in smaller numbers, because some of them will move south. Mm-hmm. But they are around. As far as putting food out for them, the best food for them is some sort of a fruit-growing, bearing tree, especially things like the winterberry, which some of the native crab apples that you can latch onto, or native roses. And then they will appreciate that sumac. And especially as a day like yesterday and a day before, where it may be a little hard to find food, a little supplement around the feeder, but they don't go for seeds, and some of them will go for mealworms, but those are kind of hard to to put out there.
But they're there.
Yeah. They're there. But the bluebirds are here, and lucky you.
Tom, thank you for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is our guest. Suzanne in Catskill. Suzanne.
Hi, Rich. Thanks for taking my call. I always enjoy your show.
Well, thank you.
I've been putting out chicken skins for a while, and the birds seem to enjoy it.
Well, sure.
But I recently put out I didn't finish a prime rib, and I hung the rib bone from a tree, and they've been going at that like crazy. Mm-hmm. Are they eating the flesh, or are they eating the fat, or why is this so popular?
Well, it's a good nutrition.
Hey, a prime rib in the Catskills. Yeah. I mean, come on.
How could you pass that
up? Exactly. Grossingers.
Any of these protein rich foods are going to attract the birds and keep them coming. You know, every now and then you'll see a little roadkill on the side of the road, or and that is a great attraction for many different kinds of birds. Even the predatory birds that will come down and scavenge what they can. So there's some good friends have these trail cameras out there where they set up and hover it over some roadkill and watch what goes on there. And it's fascinating, the birds and animals that show up at that diner.
Ha! Huh. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've had vultures and eagles come and get, you know, dead squirrels and roadkill and stuff like that. But I'm getting downy woodpeckers and chickadees.
They know a good thing when they see it.
Okay, great.
Well, that is great.
Who could turn down a prime rib?
I wish I knew about it.
Let's go to Joe in Middletown. Joe, you're on.
Hello. We've been enjoying watching this bird almost every morning. Comes around and it kind of attacks our windows and flutters from the bush to the window multiple times. He's kind of very aggressive. And we think we've identified him as the northern mockingbird.
Mm-hmm.
He's mostly grayish, has kind of an off-white breast and a pointed snout about as big as your fist. And is that particular behavior known to that species, or is any species just as likely to do this as another? And he's been doing this about 8 weeks now. And when the winter came, we thought he'd go away. And he's not bothering us. We get a kick out of him.
Is that so?
Do you think that's a northern mockingbird? Or
it sounds very much like a mockingbird, and that's what they do. Mockingbirds are very intolerant when it comes to company.
Windows.
They just don't like other birds in their territory.
Wow.
And they will go after whatever bird moves in, and your window looks like another bird to him.
Yeah.
And they're very tenacious. You're right about that. You'll just keep coming and coming and coming. So, you know, it's kind of nice that you have such a bird with such intent. On the other hand, it sure is a waste of his energy to be going after his image. It's sort of like shadow boxing. So,
yeah, they're right. Yeah.
If you can just block that image from him, perhaps he'll get over it, move on to the other edge of his territory. But in the meantime, you might try this Lujax, L-U-J-A-X, to deter the bird. Okay. It's a bird deterrent.
You're not being paid by Lujax, are you?
No, I wish I'd thought of this.
Public it's radio, you're not allowed.
No, of course, this is all informational.
Well, Joe, thanks a lot for that call. We have to take a break here. Rich Guthrie is our guest, Richard P. Guthrie. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Vision Excel Eye Care, Lake Katrine. Exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, and now new American-made frames, where eyewear is an art. VisionExcelEyeCare.com. Dr. Lucy Chapik, Latham, New York. Plastic surgery dedicated to cosmetic surgery, laser treatments, and minimally invasive facial rejuvenation since 1996. Surgeon's hands, a woman's touch. CAPEKPlasticSurgery.com. And Claire Pearson, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. For 14 years, offering plant, spirit medicine, and energy clearing for health, body, mind, and spirit. CLAREPearson.net.
Vox Pop on WAMC. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. 800-348-2551. We are lucky today to have a board member of the State Ornithological Association with us in regional.
Are you up to six yet?
I think we're up to our 12-pack. Rich Guthrie is our guest. Our number is 800-348-2551. Some events you want to let us know about before we get back to the calls.
Yeah, a little fun coming down the road. First of all, I'd like to say that on February 10th, in the evening of February 10th, I'll be out there with the Green Land Trust folks down in Athens, New York, leading an owl walk. Oh. We're going to take a little walk in the woods as it gets dark.
Yeah.
And work our way down to the riverside, the Hudson Riverside, listening for owls, and maybe we'll try a few owl calls and talk to them, and we'll talk about owls.
Well, how many different kinds of owls are you likely to see?
None.
What do you mean none? Why do it then?
Well, no, it's part of the learning experience, how you can go about doing it. And we're looking to hear them.
Ah, to hear. And if we're lucky, how many will you experience? How many different types will you be hearing?
One.
You're killing me, Guthrie. You're not selling this very well.
No. It's going to be great fun. Okay. There's more than a dozen different kinds of owls that are possible in this area. But we're going to be down in the habitat of the great horned owl, perhaps the barred owl in the neighborhood, and maybe a screech owl or two.
Okay.
And these are the ones we're going to try to work up. We're going to listen for, and we're going to talk to, and see if we can get a conversation going back and forth. But, you know, when you're dealing with 10 or 12 or 20 people shuffling around in the woods, the owls are on to that. They have good eyesight at night. Now, you can say, I don't think we'll just sit here and observe.
Well, for Pete's sake, if there are 20 people making owl calls,
no,
I think
one
even
person.
An owl is going to figure that out.
Yes, one person doing owl calls.
Okay, that'll be you.
That would be me.
Okay.
But the highlight, after the owl show, we're going to be down by the riverside watching the lunar eclipse come in. We're going to be down there just in time to see the full lunar eclipse on the night of February 10th in the quiet darkness of a winter night down by the river.
Oh, fantastic.
This is at thegreenlandtrust.org for further information.
All right.
And that's green with an extra E on the end. As in Green County.
Roger
that's
that.
Correct.
Okay.
And then a couple of the other organizations out there that have field trips coming up, which I highly recommend at this time of year. Get your feet wet with birding with knowledgeable people. The Waterman Bird Club down there in Dutchess County, New York.
Yeah.
On the 29th of January, they're going to be going down to the Schwungunk Grasslands. And there they are going to be looking for owls as well, the short-eared owl and northern harriers, and as well as things like meadowlarks and Vesper sparrows, Savannah sparrows, or whatever else are out there.
Sure.
But this is on the 29th of January. Then on the day before, on the 28th, they're going to be going to the Cary Institute down there by Millbrook, New York, on a field trip. And then February 1st, Vasso Campus. And you can find out about these things by going to the Waterman Bird Club website. That's watermanbirdclub.org.
Very good.
Easy?
Yeah.
The Mearns Bird Club down there in Orange County, New York, down by the Hudson River.
Yeah.
We'll be doing an eagle trip on January 28th.
Nice.
Where there's a possibility of seeing up to 100 eagles. They have a wonderful overlook site that they go to. And you could look down on Constitution, Iona Island, Constitution Marsh, and look for eagles down by the Hudson River. This will be on the 28th. Mearns, M-E-A-R-N-S, birdclub.org.
Fair enough.
And the Hudson Mohawk Bird Club on February 4th. We'll be doing snowshoeing at Five Rivers Environmental Education Center. Let's hope we get a little more snow in time for that.
Do you do the snowshoe?
Do I?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I prefer the skis, though.
You
They're
like to ski the shushing?
Yeah.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah. And then on February 6th, it's Bringing Back the Eagles, a program at the Colony Library near Albany, New York. Bringing back the bald eagles. And this is our friend George Steele, who's been here before.
Oh, yeah.
He'll be presenting on that. And then one more, the Alain DeVoe Bird Club on February 4th. Alain DeVoe Bird Club, A-L-A-N-D-E-V-O-E, Bird Club. We'll do a shrike search. Shrike search. S-H-R-I-K-E. That's that little
like
song.
Jerry Lewis. Shrike.
That could be. Never know what you find out
so
there.
So what is it?
February
what are you talking
4th.
About?
The shrike is a songbird kind of turned nasty. They're a predatory songbird. They're out there. They have a, well, not so musical song, but they sing, you know, just like a robin on the top
Barbara
of a bush.
Streisand.
And then they're out there and going after little songbirds.
Fair enough. All right, are you done?
Yeah,
okay,
we're
good.
Done.
Good. The phone number here is 800-348-2551. And Richard P. Guthrie, our guest. Quickly an email, and then we'll get right back to the calls. This one's from Larry, who says, "Hi there, folks. I've never seen a baby crow. That's mysterious, and I hope you can share some thoughts as to why not."
Well, baby crows look like big crows. Most birds, before they leave the nest, will go to full size. They're about full size. And there's no plumage change from a baby crow to an adult crow. So there's you're seeing them that they just look like every other crow out there. So after the nesting season, there's going to be a lot more baby crows than there are American adult crows.
Yeah.
Because for every two, there's four. So you're going to see a lot more. But there is a way of telling later on, in August or so, the adult crows start to lose their feathers. They go into the annual molt.
Yeah.
And the baby crows have all brand new fresh feathers, so they're not molting. So the adult crows are the ones up there with the shaggy edge to their wingtips.
That's how you know.
Yep.
Let's go to Michael in Poughkeepsie. Michael, you're on with Richard P. Guthrie.
Thank you. I have a simple question. I have built a house rent house that a house rent has moved in, but I'd like to put up more house rent houses, but I know they're territorial, so how far apart do I have to put the houses?
Your house rent That's house?
The only question, and I'm listening on the radio.
Okay, very good.
Very good. House wrens, Jenny wrens, as they're sometimes called, a little backyard bird that has, it just has an incessant song. The guy sings all day long, all day long, all day long. No matter how many houses you put up in close proximity, the male will continue to build nests in each of those things because they build these dummy nests and make it look like this. You know, there are no vacancies here. You know, stay away. So I would say that you would probably want to have a good 30 yards between house wren nest boxes.
Or else the one guy will just keep building.
Yeah, he'll just go around looking for a house wren nest box to fill up with sticks.
I'll be darned.
Yeah. But just, whether it works or not, I guess it works because why would they do it?
So 30 yards.
Yeah, say 30 yards.
Let's go to Martin in Housatonic, Mass. Martin, you're on.
Hi, I don't know. It's Tom in Housatonic.
Oh, all right, Tom.
Hi, Tom.
If that's what you want to call yourself, you go right ahead.
Hi, Ray. Hey, yeah, I'm just calling up about the guy that called in about the crow going after the foundation, the insulation on his house.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have styrofoam insulation on my foundations, and I also have chickens. And whenever I let the chickens out, when they're out roaming around, they love while they're doing their death, they love picking at the side of that stuff.
And I wonder why.
Well, I don't know. I've always thought of like it's just like grit or something that they.
I hope
they,
not.
They started destroying it so much that every time once in a while I take a styrofoam cooler, you know, the old white plastic styrofoam cooler, to throw it out in their pen, and they love it. They pick at it and
yikes,
you know, and just consume it with their.
Do they actually swallow it?
See, that's what. Oh, I think so.
Wow, that's got to be not good.
Or maybe not. I mean, maybe it is like stones that help the digestion.
Styrofoam?
I don't know.
It's hardly.
Who knew?
Hardly gritty.
Well, Martin, thank you for that.
Yeah, that's a mystery.
Well, we'll look into that. And,
yes, indeed.
If you know more, of course, you can go to Richard P. Guthrie's blog at the Times Union. It's birds. Right?
Yes, it is birding.
Let's go to Mike in Saratoga Springs, Mike.
Oh, good afternoon, and thanks, WMC, for having Rich on again. Love him.
Sure thing.
And my question is kind of a basic one. It's a two-part one about my bird feeder. One, I know some days they just don't come, and some days it's like, you know, Grand Central Station. I don't know. I know the weather on a real cold day, maybe I have something to do with it. And part two, I just had a quick follow-up. Once in a while, the suet on the side will draw, you know, woodpeckers, but they seem to come and then they'll go away for 2-3 weeks and they'll come again. I'm just wondering, is it the same woodpeckers or they just don't eat as much? So that's my question.
Okay.
Well, I think it's probably the same birds that are coming and not coming. And birds have this pattern that they will follow. They will roam around, just vagabonds, and just work their way around to one favorite spot after another. And if you have a different birds with a wider range of meanderings, then it'll be a while before they get back on a quiet pattern. If storms bring in a new urgency, and the lingerers, the laggards, the slower ones will come in a hurry just to get into the front of that food line.
Thank you, Mike. And to Denise in Clifton Park. Denise.
Hi, good afternoon. I have a very active backyard. I have 4 bird feeders with different kinds of seed. And 2 weeks ago, I looked out the window, and there were 5 or 6 birds completely still for the longest time.
Uh-huh.
So I thought, there's either a cat or a hawk out there. And sure enough, I spotted a hawk up in one of my trees. Now, fast forward a week, except for the occasional woodpecker, I didn't have any birds. And I thought that was really weird. And so I went out, I cleaned out all my bird feeders, put new seed in. Another week went by, no birds. Now, the last 2 days, I'm flooded with birds again.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess my question is about the hawk. Would a hawk hang out in an area for a couple weeks and move on? Or what is their nesting habit?
Well, first off, they wouldn't be nesting now. What you have is a overwintering hawk. And yes, they will, when they find a bird feeder, and in a literal sense, then they will hang out. They know a good thing when they see it. And, you know, the birds, on the other hand, it's just like the previous caller. They're out there. They move away. They search other nicks and crannies and corners of their little realm. And weather like yesterday and the day before will bring them right back in again. Which brings to mind,
yes,
one of the things that this is a time, and weather like yesterday is a time to look for the unexpected guys out there. It's a good to become very familiar with the ones that are regulars, the common birds, that everyday birds, so that you can pick out the oddball that shows up out of a storm.
Can you give me an example of an oddball that might appear?
The green-tailed towhee. I'm sure glad that you asked.
The green-tailed towhee.
Yes.
Right, you are.
The green-tailed towhee is a bird of the Southwest and in the Western.
Oh, look at that!
Yeah,
pretty.
And it's one of my
favorites.
Favorites to look for, to hear about, because they do occur. We know that they're out there. It's just a question of, will somebody recognize a green-tailed towhee or the Dick Sisal or the Harris's sparrow when it shows up in a backyard feeder in the Northeast? We got to be. And then, if you do find it, eBird or myself, the Richard P. Guthrie.
What's that middle initial?
P as in Peter.
Richard P. Guthrie.
As in with the tufted titmouse.
At gmail.com. Okay. And then if you email Rich and you have a picture and you just let him know, hey, this is okay to put on the blog. With attribution.
Yes, of course. Yes,
let's
I'd
go
love to have
over
that.
To Christian in Casanova, New York. Christian.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking the call. Sorry, no green-tailed tui finding record report.
I'm disappointed now.
First off, Richard, your story of your owl walk brings back memories of walking out in the woods with my father back out in Ohio, out in the country. Looking for the screech owl that we heard and mm-hmm. you know, trying to find them. And of course, great horned owls as well. And we occasionally saw them, but you're right. They know not to hang around and don't want to be eye spied. But
that's what we're going to work on is to learn how to do that. We're going to see if we can get them to answer, but also take it home with you and bring the kids out in a similar pattern that you and your dad did.
Right. Well, my father was also a big fan of raptors.
Mm-hmm.
He's no longer with us, so every time I see a raptor, I say hi to him. But I had an experience at my place in Casanova, out the outskirts of Casanova. It's out in the country where there's tons of hummingbirds and sparrows and purple martins and whatnot. Well, I was inside, and out of the corner of my eye, I see this flutter out in the yard. I look out, and something has already captured something on the ground. His wings were spread out. He was kind of grounding himself. He was just, you know, he had captured it, and he was just figuring out what to do next. Well, to my surprise, I've never seen this before, and I did some research. It ended up being a Cooper's hawk, which I've never seen before. Beautiful red eye. And this beautiful gray tones, you know, two or three gray tones, but pretty solid gray. But he had captured it was either a northern flicker or a sap sucker. It was a bird not much smaller than him. And I was just amazed. And I went out, I took some pictures from inside, went outside to try and grab some closer-up shots. And you know, to my amazement, he struggled, but he took off with him in his grip.
Wow.
And I was just surprised that he kind of attacked kind of one of his kind. I thought the hawks generally went after mice and moles and other rodents kind of thing.
This well, common, Rich?
Well, that's what Cooper's hawks do. They're actually a bird hunting hawk.
Ah,
and, okay.
And I tell you, that had to be a very noisy situation there, because flickers or sapsuckers are noisy to begin with, and especially when in the talons of a hawk.
And Cooper hawks are not that big?
They are big, yeah.
Sapsucker isn't that big, is it?
Sapsucker is a fair-sized woodpecker. It's bigger than a downy, about the size of a hairy woodpecker, not as big as a flicker. But nonetheless, all within range for a Cooper's hawk.
There you go.
Yep.
Well, Christian.
Wait, thanks, guys.
Hey, thanks a lot for the call. You know, I don't know. We only have about a minute here. Kathy has been waiting. I don't know where you're calling from, Kathy. We only have about 30 seconds for you, but go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to answer the guy who called about bluebirds. We've had houses for about 4 years. We've had nestings every year except this past year, sometimes two or three. And we have fed bluebirds whenever they have broods, and they eat mealworms, dried mealworms, voraciously.
Well, there you go.
And we have also had them winter over with us, eating dried mealworms. This past year, we were not able to attract them, perhaps because they didn't nest in any of our boxes. But you can. It takes some persistence, and they eat a lot of mealworms, and you have to put them in something so that the mockingbirds can't get at them, because the mockingbirds will eat you out of house and home.
Okay. Well, that's very good information. And once bluebirds learn that they're there, they love them. But they got to find them and learn about them first. So good job.
Rich Guthrie, Richard P. Guthrie, to be precise. Your blog, once again, can be found where?
AlbanyTimesUnion.com. At the Times Union.
TimesUnion.com.
Yeah. At birding.
And look for birding.
Right.
And that's where you'll be.
In the blog section.
And
yes.
If people want to send the picture of that yellow-bellied sapsucker or the
green-tailed
toady
or the
whatever.
Richard P. Guthrie at gmail.com.
And the Guthrie is spelled?
G-U-T-H-R-I-E.
Well, Richard, this was Richard P., this was a good time today, and I appreciate you being here.
One more ornithology?
All right. You know, it's nice to have an expert on ornithology here on the program, and thank you for bringing that up. Support comes from the New York State Bar Association's Lawyer Referral and Information Service, celebrating over 35 years, serving the public, 800-342-3661. And Watercolors by Edith, Shutesbury, Massachusetts. Shutesbury, Massachusetts, that is. Edith Hunsberger, a painter in acrylic and watercolors, specializing in portrait paintings of people and pets from photographs. Edith-Hunsberger.artistwebsites.com. Thanks to everybody who called in. I apologize to those who were left on the line. There were so many of them. It's Richard P. Guthrie is very, very popular. Thanks to Zach Malloy. A weird bird indeed at the controls. Your phones were answered today by Louise Butler. And a splendid job, Louise. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. He owes me a 12-pack. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's another exciting edition of Vox Pop that I don't know what it is, but we'll find out together.